Hello, and welcome to the Aquarian Spirals podcast, musings on astrology, cosmology, and soulful rooted spirituality. Your guide to love soaked revolution and paradigm shift. Hello, and welcome to episode 45 of the Aquarian Spirals podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Moreno, astrologer, soul worker, and lover of golden hour, dogs, and Mama Ocean. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, welcome. I am so excited about this episode, which features a conversation with Jana Barrett about all things Taurus. This is kicking off kind of a year-long series that I hope to do, which is going to focus on each of the signs of the zodiac as experienced and lived through many different lenses. And it's also going to kind of complement and somewhat coincide with a series that I will be launching soon that is just going to be more of a deep dive into the signs that will encourage you to kind of like tap into your own lived experience of the signs in terms of a seasonal zodiac. So more on that later. And before I kind of get you all oriented to what's in store with this episode, I have a few announcements per usual. So one is, if you haven't signed up for my newsletter, please do so through my website, aquarianspirals.com. Newsletters are just a much better way to keep in touch with what I'm doing than social media. One, because I'm just not consistent on social media. I really am trying to pull myself away from it as much as possible. But also because I have announcements that go out only to my newsletter and to my Patreon. So new announcements coming up will include new Patreon offerings that'll center my desire to work with folks more closely as they're learning astrology for personal growth or astrology as a practitioner. Along those lines, I am hosting a chart clinic on May 18th through my Patreon, which is something I like to do periodically. Chart clinics are essentially just opportunities for folks to come together and ask questions. So you can ask a question about your own chart. So like, what does it mean to have Saturn squaring Neptune? It can be a chance to ask a question about your life. So if you're really, you know, at a crossroads or you're thinking a lot about something like your career, you could say, you know, what would be based on my chart would be a good career for me. But it's also a time to practice reading charts, which I know can make folks feel like they are, you know, stepping out on a limb, but I try to create a really super friendly environment and container. And we all just kind of like do our best to support each other in them. And so, you know, different techniques and approaches to the chart are welcome. You can sign up for my Patreon at $10 a month or higher to get access, although my Patreon levels will be changing in the next week. So if you want that $10 level, you should do that soon. NORWAC is coming up, Northwest Astrological Conference. I will be there for sure. It's like my 12th or 13th time going. I am not doing a lecture this year, which I have for the last 2 years. And I will say that OMG, I love presenting at NORWAC, and OMG, it's kind of been nice not to feel the crunch of lecture prep right now. But if you'll be there too, please do feel free to pull me aside and say hello. You know, I can be an extreme introvert, and the way that sometimes comes across at things like conferences is that I kind of keep my gaze down, but I am happy to be pulled aside by folks for chats. And I will also have a limited number of sessions available. I'll be doing sessions from my hotel room. If you'd like to work with me, that link will be going out to my mailing list soon. Okay. So today's episode, all about Taurus. Janet and I recorded this episode in the energies of the new moon in Taurus. And Jana is just incredible. They are a humanistic and evolutionary astrologer, diviner, writer, activist, and witch, and just all around stunning human who, you know, is just an incredible practitioner, is really prolific on social media, so Threads and Instagram. Jana creates a lot of content that are, you know, weekly and monthly tarot readings. So you should definitely check them out. But Jana was actually a student of mine at Portland School of Astrology and then went on to take my EA immersion course. And, you know, they're just super freaking keen psychological awareness combined with their really on the nose divination skills always just humble the heck out of me. And Jana and I also recently combined forces with Amanda Painter, who is an incredible astrologer who used to be my editor when I spent 2 years writing weekly astrology and spirituality columns. And the three of us have kind of formed a new Substack called The Astrophile. And technically, we've only done a soft launch of the project while we work out the glitches. But we've just been posting articles there that I am so proud of and so in awe of. And so you can go to theastrophile.substack.com to check out writing there. I wrote a piece I'm particularly proud of called Body of Wonder, which was a retrospective on the time that Uranus has spent in Taurus, in the light of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And Jana and Amanda have really insightful pieces there as well. Taroscopes, horoscopes, but more on that project soon. But I think that it's going to be a great home for really incredible, longer format astrological writing that doesn't shy away from experiential astrology and modern astrology and, you know, lived, robust, dynamic astrology. Anyway, I really hope you enjoyed this conversation with Jana. It runs the gamut from Taurus by element and modality to Taurian superpowers and Achilles heels. And it ends with a bit of divination by way of bibliomancy as well as tarot reading to kind of help guide you through this Taurian lunar cycle. So here you go.
All right. So welcome to the podcast, Jana. It's been quite some time since I have had a guest on. So I'm really excited to kind of get back into the groove of that again and have you here.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I think just launching in, I want to start with your Taurus credentials because, you know, I chose you because you are one of the people that comes to mind when I think of Taurus. So what do you got for us?
Yeah. So I'm a Taurus sun, Taurus rising, Taurus Mercury, and that's in Porphyry or Campanus or whatever quadrant system. Those two planets are in my 12th house. They're ruled by my Venus and Pisces.
Woohoo. Yes. We have the mutual Venus and Pisces. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of Taurus.
It is a lot of Taurus. Sometimes I forget.
Yeah. We might say you are a Taurian type.
Yeah, you could say that.
And you know, when it comes to my own Taurus credentials, I was just thinking about this before we started talking because you had said that you were going to get a snack. And I was like, this is what makes me feel like a Taurian imposter because I don't like snacks. Like, I just don't. It's not that I don't like them. I just don't. I'm not a snacker.
You don't snack? Are you a meal person? Like, you sit down for a proper meal?
I mean, I wouldn't say that I sit down for a proper meal. Sometimes I eat them like standing in my kitchen when I'm just like, get that carrot in there, get that piece of bread in there. But yeah, I just eat like three meals and that's pretty much it. And so when it comes to my own Taurus credentials, I feel like an imposter sometimes. I don't have any of the, you know, major planets there. I have Midheaven in Taurus, which is strong. And then I have a Vesta Chiron conjunction in Taurus. Although I will say that some of the most consistent feedback I get working with people is that they feel like grounded and safe in my presence. And I'm like, oh, that's that Midheaven, among other things. All right. So just kind of starting to kind of break down a discussion about Taurus. I figured we could start with Taurus just by element. And so thinking about Taurus as an earth sign. And I'm wondering if anything just comes to mind off the bat for you there.
I always see a garden when I think about Taurus. And I know that's kind of cliche, but like it's the image that I'm immediately immersed in a very like sensual way. And I think that that connection to Taurus for me is really strong, that as soon as I start really thinking of it and sort of grounding in it, I feel my senses come alive. I feel that sort of activation, and it's much less intellectual and much more like experiential or felt.
Embodied. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess I tend to think of the elements as like describing a storyline. And so the earth storyline starts with Taurus, which is like the ground of being essentially. Right. And is just like raw earth element. So like the garden itself, and then Virgo would be more like, what are we going to do with it? Mm-hmm. And then Capricorn would be more, you know, what, how do I have mastery over this thing? Like now that I've figured out what to do with it, how am I going to really build something off of it? But I think that that image of the garden is so important. I mean, cliches are cliche for a reason, right? But just invoking that sense of like,
yeah,
being surrounded by plants and scents. And, you know, I think we can think of embodiment in lots of different ways using the zodiac, of course. But to me, like Taurus is embodiment and somatic awareness, being that kind of like multi-dimensional, what happens when you're sensing into the environment. And then that's connecting with emotions and mind and spirit and all of those things.
Very much so. Yeah. And with, I mean, Taurus as an earth element, or as an earth sign rather, is like, so the experience of it is so distinct from Virgo and Capricorn, and like rightfully so, but it feels physically so different. Like I'm standing on top of Taurus energy. I'm like sitting on Taurus. Like it is that very, the physicality of it is felt, I think, in a way that I don't experience so much with Virgo and with Capricorn.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I'm thinking like Taurus for me, there's more of like a thunk, like down into the root, down into the body. So there's almost a heaviness, not like in a bad way, but in a very full way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we hit record, but before we sat down, I pulled this card, the Eight of Earth, as kind of like a, you know, what will this podcast episode focus on? And it is an image of a fairy, kind of in a garden with just different plants that you can see like the roots going down into the earth. And then she's kind of like smelling one of the flowers, and there's like a bee on one of them. And so it's bringing in the kind of whole ecosystem that is part of that earth element. I think that thunk, that feeling kind of gets us into Taurus bimodality as well, right? So it's fixed earth.
We're here.
We are here. Do not move us. I mean, that gets into like Taurus, you know, a lot of times the first thing people will say is like stubborn. Do you relate to that?
Oh yeah. I just said this morning, can I curse on this podcast? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. This morning I was like, I'm a stubborn bitch. And like, I don't think I'm a bitch, but like I can be immovable when I think pushed to be immovable. And it's definitely a sort of defense mechanism. But I think like coming back to the sensory experience of Taurus, there is a sort of like, I need to be in my body in order to find what's true. And I think sometimes Taurian stubbornness for me comes through as like what it looks like on the outside when I'm really trying to like root into myself and find what's true. And that can look like, you know, taking a while or slowing things down or trying to like bring the pace of life down to a level that feels accessible. Because it can also, I think, lead to There's a feeling of being easily overwhelmed, I think, with the sensory experience of life and with the chatter and with all sorts of stuff. And stubbornness can be a very effective and frustrating response to that.
Yeah, I mean, stubbornness is a way of kind of like, coping's maybe not the right word, right? But like, as a way of like standing my ground. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way before. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's a very different type of stubbornness than the other fixed signs. Like, I think we're all stubborn in our own ways, but like, it kind of comes through in, I feel like, different elemental experiences too. Like, Taurus can be physically stubborn. Like, we can like move slowly. We can like bring our pace down and refuse to be rushed, or be stubborn about preferences and like environmental preferences. Like, I can be really picky about fragrances and style and things that are more Venusian to flavors. But then I think it gets expressed pretty differently in the different fixed signs too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely true. It's difficult for me to discern the differences sometimes because I have so much different fixed energy
yeah.
in me. But
me too.
I'm like, Taurus stubbornness is really like digging in.
Yes.
Like, there's that kind of like digging down into things like, no, you will not push me.
Yes.
And that can come through in that kind of like slowing down kind of way. But it can also come through, I've noticed, with Taurian people in my life in terms of like pushing forward. Like, Taurians can be just as workaholic-y as Virgos and Capricorns, right? There's this kind of like plodding energy, PLODDING, that's just like, keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like body becomes secondary, like just pushing through like body pain, body discomfort in order to like get the thing done. Like, I'm seeing an image in my head right now of like a person on a farm, like pulling a wagon in the hot sun and just like, you just got to keep going. You just got to get it done. And then like the end of the day will come and you'll rest.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny because I had a very similar image come through when you were describing that at first. And it's, yeah, the ability to like, to neglect the body, I think, is very strong in Taurus, almost like can fall into that sort of pattern at once being really embodied, but then also sometimes a sort of like dissociative capacity that Taurus has to leave the body when necessary to like complete the goal or to do the thing or to get to the place.
Yeah.
And that sort of like tunnel vision can be intense.
That's a form of fixity and stubbornness all its own, right?
Yeah.
I'm also thinking of like, I have been graced with relationships with elder Taurian people who just keep freaking going. Like, their bodies are just like, yeah, we're doing this. Like, we're just going to stay alive into our 90s. We're
oh,
keep
like
going
into old age, you mean?
Into old age. Yes. They're like, I'm just like, wow, that kind of like Taurus endurance comes through, or that kind of like stubborn, I'm not leaving this place. I'm going to keep going.
Big time.
Which I guess is very different than like, I always say Aquarius stubbornness is very like, I'm not stubborn, I just know when I'm right.
Yeah.
Whereas Taurian stubbornness can be more like defiance.
Yes.
And that's
for sure.
Not to say Aquarius doesn't like rebel for the sake of rebellion. And then Scorpio stubbornness, could like tidal wave out an entire nation.
It's a beast of its own. Yeah. And then I think Leonian stubbornness or Leonine stubbornness is kind of like, it can be the more like egoic expression, like, because I didn't mention I'm a Leo moon. And so we're both very fixed. And I think that like in arguments, sometimes in the past, my like Leo stubbornness would come through where I would be like, no, no. And like affirm myself in the process. Like, no, I think like I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. And that feels different than the Taurian stubbornness, which is, it's not so like hot-headed as it is like hard-headed. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of Leo stubbornness. Another image comes to mind, but it's this like home video we have of me when I was, I don't know, 3 and my brother was 1 and the camera's on me. I'm Leo rising. The camera's on me and I'm singing a Christmas carol, just like very sweetly singing. And then my mom pans over to my brother and I start like screaming the Christmas carol. And then she brings it back over to me and I go back to like sweet demeanor. And then there is this kind of Leo stubbornness and like, you will see me, you yeah. will pay attention to me and you will like me.
Yes.
And I know I'm thinking of several Leonian types in my life right now who have that kind of like, there's a fixation on like, how do I get them to see me? How do I get them to yes, like me?
For sure. Yeah.
But there's also something with like Leo being a fire sign, kind of like wielding the fire, you know, if like Aries is like raw fire and Leo is kind of like, you know, honing it in the heart as an expressive force. I guess there can be, I don't know, there's something about the like shaping of it that can feel stubborn.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And thinking about Leonian like creativity and I mean, some Leo artists I know, for instance, are very prolific. Like they kind of have this commitment to their creative energy that's like very generative and consistent. And it gets expressed, I think, differently, of course, than Taurus creativity, which can be creative too. But it's like the desire that I think Taurus has to like build something and to make something and to form something, beautify something, can be very stubborn in its own way too. Like this right. ongoing process.
Well, and that's kind of the like the main keyword I use for the fixed signs is demonstrating. Right? They are here to demonstrate something, or even if we think about it seasonally, Taurus season is demonstrating spring. And so if I go back to that kind of like storyline thing that I did with the element, then Taurus is the foundations that make the Leo expression possible. And so it is like all of these fixed signs, it is their job.
Yeah.
To do the thing, to demonstrate it, to show it. And so there can be that immovability in there. That is, you know, we could say stubborn, but we can also just say it's demonstrating. That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. I like persistent.
Persistent. Enduring. Yes. Committed.
I'm
absolutely.
So committed. Yeah. Committed to an idea, to a project, to a person.
There's so much room for healthy maturation in that.
Right? Yeah, like, for sure.
But there are definitely times where, like, I notice this comes out the most when I'm interacting with my mom, where she will, like, ask me to do something, tell me to do something or anything, and I will know logically that she is right, and it's just like, no, I will not do that thing. And the more that you push me, the more that I'm going to dig in, and I know that it's ridiculous and I can't stop it.
Yep. Deeply relatable. There are specific relationships, you know, my relationship with my mom comes to mind, who's a Scorpio, and that defiance can be so strong that even if there is a part of me that's like, what, why though? Because there's this sort of, you know, Piscean mutability that's like, but we could just do that, we could just adapt. And I think that like sometimes really aids my Taurus placements because it gives them some movement and finesse, but yeah, I relate big time. It's like, no, sometimes it's actually like my body is unwilling to do that. Like, even if my mind is open to it, my body will not.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's another way that I relate to Taurus is in that kind of like holding, that the physical somatic holding, or even in, you know, past life regression work and somatic work, when strong Taurus stuff comes up, it's oftentimes like the, you know, the sight of chronic pain, chronic tension, and body holding things. And I've had to make a practice for my own life of being like, body, I'll like put my hand wherever it is and be like, body, you can let it go. And I just kind of send a little bit of vibration in there, like jiggle it. I'm jiggling my belly right now, like jiggling it around a little bit, just like, it's so you can let it go. Yeah. Right. But it's that like, no, I must hold on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where Taurus gets into like, you know, it's associated with possessions, but also possessiveness and that kind of like holding on to things.
Yeah. Yep. It's a toughie, that gripping at like, as you were saying that, I was feeling my like TMJ jaw, and that like TMJ itself feels so Taurian. Focused on like the jaw and neck pain, and how often when I'm like really gripping so tightly to an outcome, a person, a project, whatever it is, my TMJ will really kick up. And for most of my life, when people were like, just relax your jaw, I was like, I genuinely don't know what you mean. Like, I've tried, I can't do it. And until recently, going through this Neptune Venus transit we're going through, just like really knocking on the door about surrender, I started being able to relax my jaw intentionally. And throughout this Taurus season, like when that feeling comes up, I have to be like, okay, I'm going to sit here for as long as it takes to be able to do this, and trying to like use that stubbornness to sort of like work on the other forms of stubbornness. So
yeah, that's significant repatterning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's making me think also of like deep tissue massage. Like I use the word remediation, not in the like traditional sense, but like Taurian remediation to me sometimes are things like deep tissue massage or acupressure that's like geared towards pushing on the held points to try and like manually release them, right? And then paying attention to the emotions that come or the memories that come or the other sensation to just kind of like greet it and say like, hey, body, I hear that you are communicating something to me, and I know that you're not lying because body never lies. How can we help each other?
Yeah. Yeah. Big time. Some of the biggest, I think, emotional healing experiences I've had have been during phases when I was doing a lot of acupuncture, doing a lot of stretching and decentering the mental processes, like not so much in CBT, but in the embodied practices, in the somatic practices. And then that sort of like magical shift where I would notice I was relaxed in a situation that had previously upset me or gotten me activated. And that's when I really, it felt like the rubber was kind of hitting the road, and I was noticing true healing was in the somatic response to situations that used to really activate me.
Right. And I think that is that kind of multi-dimensionality of somatic awareness, because so many times people think that somatic is just body, like physicality in it. It is that, but then it's the connection between all of these things. And that's why I love that somatic modalities and somatic healing is such a huge thing under this Uranus and Taurus transit.
Yeah.
Because in so many ways, it's like Taurus is about embodiment and body and earth, but also within that is that Taurus is about presence, which I used to think was a very like Sag thing. Like, you know, just like sitting on the hillside, watching the like herd of elephants go by and being like zenned out. But presence is about being present in the body.
Yeah.
With what's happening here and now. And Taurus is the access point for that, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That thud can be the thud of presence. Like, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And that sort of space holding, I think, is a way that Taurus energy can be supportive to itself and to other people, is like the physical presence and attention that you can demonstrate. Mm-hmm. Was that the keyword? Demonstrate?
Yep.
Yeah. That you can Absolutely. Demonstrate in those moments. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also with the, you know, Taurus is also associated with survival in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. like particularly physical survival needs. Like, what do I have? What are my resources? But it can also be, you know, physical survival fears and feelings mm-hmm. of lack. And so that kind of like accessing embodiment, mindfulness, presence is a way of helping with those kinds of fears. But also, like, mm-hmm. if we're looking across the circle at Scorpio, mm-hmm. then that kind of like Taurian, I mean, the Taurian like digging in can definitely be a way of balancing out the Scorpio, but also just being able to be, you know, the calm in the eye of the storm, or being able to like take a deep breath and mm-hmm. go, okay, I see you, tidal wave of emotions. Mm-hmm. I feel you, tidal wave of emotions. And here's how we're going to breathe through this. Like, mm-hmm. that's a way that polarity kind of like balances itself out.
Yeah. I kind of like see almost a whirlpool and then like the circle of earth that's containing it. And it's like, it can still happen. You don't mm-hmm. need to turn it off, but like, we're creating the perimeter for this to occur and to sort of like keep it here so that we can be with it.
Yeah. So, you know, we're about halfway through Taurus season-ish. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I am focusing more on in my own practice and my own teaching is like noticing the environmental experience of the season. So like, what does Taurus look like on the land that you're inhabiting? And so with that in mind, and just more generally speaking, I'm curious about what you've been noticing about Taurus this Taurus season.
I've been noticing actually just the like creature life a lot this season. This is my first Taurus season in the city that I'm living in. And just the way that I think animals are interacting with the environments alongside humans and alongside weather. And like, we have all these families of geese with all these growing geese. And I was away for a week and I came back and these baby geese are like so much bigger than they were a week ago. And so I'm seeing this like growth process occurring around me, which is really cool. And I feel like I do get to witness like these families emerging that are non-human. And there's that feeling of like the building sensation. Like, I see you getting bigger. You have eaten a bunch of grass. Like, you are a gosling that is like twice the size than you were a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And then I'm also noticing just like a different energy among the animals, because now that the geese are born, they're out of this like fiery Aries season energy where they were like defending their nests and like hissing at us and chasing us down. And now it's like, I'm going to protect, but like, I'm going to look at you. I'm not going to chase after you. Like, it's the sort of like shift in the way that they're interacting with us. And Yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting. Like, I'm looking out my window because there's so much green. Every single tree that I see is just bright green and lush. And it feels like sort of being cloaked in the spirit of nature constantly when I look out the window. And it's like accessible and it's right there and it's steady and it's bright. But there's also like, I don't know, a sort of Taurian possessiveness that I feel over it. Cause I'm like, I kind of want to like capture this. Like I want it to like stay like this for a while.
Stay that way, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it feels still. It feels lush. And I also feel this sense of like waiting that I think is common with Taurus because like for as, you know, stubborn and slow as we can be at times, there's also, I think, often a sort of patience to Taurus that whether it's like chosen patience or you're just like kind of forced into patience. But I'm feeling that as I like observe what's going on around me. Like I need to wait for something. I need to be patient.
Yeah, I love that kind of like the stillness and lushness, and I think patience can be a Taurian virtue, right? There is like a stabilizing quality to patience, right? That is very
Sure.
like the anti-Aries.
Yeah. We learn patience with Taurus. Yeah, or start to.
You know, I've been thinking about it a lot just because I have been in Arizona and northern Mexico for the bulk of tourist season, and I'm used to being in Seattle. And it's just so different. Like I grew up in the desert, and I guess there is spring here. Like the saguaros get these huge flowers on top of them, and the prickly pears get these like bright violet and pink and yellow flowers on them. But it feels so much more subdued than the Pacific Northwest, where like mid-April hits and it's just like giant rhododendrons and hydrangeas and roses, and then there's like the minty green on the trees, but then there's like the deep green of the evergreens, and then there's like yellows and reds, and the sun starts coming out, and then it's just like it is Taurus season and I am horny, like please. And that is such a Taurus thing too, right? Like I want skin on skin, and it's sure sensuality. But it's also like, let's do it. Like, there's that like
No,
increase.
big time for sure. Yeah. Coming out of the experience of winter, like fully into spring, is like, oh my God, I'm alive. Like, and so is everything else.
Yeah, so I mean, Taurus is pleasure, right? But pleasure is also sex and se sexuality and sensuality and masturbation and like all of these things that I definitely, I mean, that's spring fever, right? Like that's so Taurian. I mean, and Aries too, right? But we kind of see it through. And it's been interesting to be in Arizona where I've realized that like I'm in my Aquarius sun when I'm in Arizona. Like there's no roots. I can't like I have a Scorpio moon on the IC that wants to just like taproot down to get water. And there's no water in the ground here, and so it's just more of like an ephemeral, ethereal, like detached experience. And then when I'm in the Pacific Northwest, where there's water and like greenery, I'm like, oh, I can feel rooted here, and I start to experience that the most in Taurus season. That like, oh, I am part of this land, rather than just kind of like walking amongst it. Which is very different.
Yes. When I was living in Portland, it was during tourist season that I just started walking around like barefoot everywhere. And I would go to the park, go to Laurelhurst Park pretty much every day and just walk around barefoot for like hours at a time. And I wasn't really conscious of the fact that I was like doing Taurus, but I mean, I was big time. It was like the volume had been turned up as spring was springing and just like moving from flower to flower and smelling them, feeling like a little bee, like so immersed that like the chatter of people was just kind of like background noise. And I think sometimes when you like see people, Taurus people, or people during Taurus season, there can be that like timelessness feeling too. Like it's presence that also lends to a feeling of like, I'm just in it. Mm-hmm. Like we're just here. I'm mm-hmm. in my senses. I'm in the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have like scents, songs, foods, tactile pleasures that you specifically associate with Taurus?
Yeah, I definitely associate florals with Taurus. Like I often think of jasmine and rose, maybe because those are the two scents that I wear consistently. I think of Taurus as, you know, being a bit more decadent. And so there's like dark chocolate with sea salt or like a lavender oat milk latte, or like give me the syrup, give me the flavors. Often I think of it also as like a meal that takes longer to prepare, but that you linger over and have a wine and listen to music as you cook. And it's the sort of experience of like, what can we do that could make this even more delicious? Like there's an end of Taurus where I think of like the 5% more pleasure rule, except maybe it's like the 50% more pleasure rule. Like, how can we make this even more delicious?
Whether let's be stubborn about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think of roses are a big thing for me with Taurus and Taurian medicine. I think for a lot of reasons, like I have, you know, strong connection with Venus, one of the rulers of Taurus, but also like the first spring that I spent in the Seattle area, I was working at a hospital and there was a rose garden on the premises. And I remember like walking through the rose garden and being like, what? This can exist, right? Because again, I mean, it's not that they don't have roses in Arizona, but just like a whole fragrant freaking rose garden. I was like, what is this magic? And so now I think of like rose and sandalwood, or like sandalwood and vanilla, or something with like a vetiver bass note. So there's that like, you know, deep, deep undertone of Taurus, and then with something that's like really fragrant, or like foods that are very fragrant and slow, or like, you know, sitting in the park with like good food is a very Taurian thing to me, but also like a midsummer thing. But I also always think of this song by Kate Bush called The Sensual World, which like any like Taurus playlist or like Taurus workshop that I teach, I'm like, we're going to listen to Kate Bush now talking about the sensual world. Because it is that kind of like, you know, if I think seasonally in the Northern Hemisphere coming out of winter, it is like, oh, there's so much like food for the senses going on right now. Even just like the air smells different in Taurus season.
Yeah. I also think of even just the scent of like wet earth can feel very Taurian, the scent of soil, of grass, and, you know, combining that like floral and then also the earthy, like, can smell the dirt on my hands from the gardening.
Yeah. Getting dirty. It's making me think, let's see where this thought goes. But you know, one of the things we had kind of talked about a little bit before the call was like Taurus and shame. And you know, a couple years ago I was doing some shadow integration work and I kept coming across a part of myself that was showing herself to me by being like somebody who was like wallowing in the mud and just like coating herself in mud, and was just like, I mean, essentially like getting off on that experience. And then like the part of me that was like, ew, like, what are you doing? That's so like uncouth, like uncivilized, essentially, right? And that when I'm thinking, I'm always thinking about shame just because it, you know, shows up so much in the work that I do. I'm sure the work that you do as well. And I do think of shame as being a very like earth sign centric thing, not to say that like we're talking about signs and not people.
Yeah.
But when I think of like Taurian shame, there does seem to be something that has to do with like body as being, or like earth as being lesser than or worse than everything else. And it also gets into like Taurian issues of like self-worth and self-value, which have to do with access to resources. But also with like cultural constructs around like what bodies should look like and smell like and feel like, and then what do you feel if your body isn't that way? Often shame.
Yeah. I'm glad you framed it that way, because when you first brought up the idea of Taurus and shame, it like somehow it was like clicking for me somewhere, but I wasn't getting it. And now that we're talking about it, it makes perfect sense with the sort of like Venusian side. Like astrologers will often talk about Venus as being at times like vapid or shallow. And that, as like a Taurus Venusian person, I was like, I hate that. Stop. Stop saying that. But there is that sort of shame that I think comes up with Taurus too, around like the desire for earthly pleasures and the desire for beauty and for beautiful experiences and attachment at times to beauty and to like the Venusian beauty standards that we experience. And then also like the possessiveness, or, you know, stereotypical like materialism of Taurus that can show up in a lot of different sort of shame-based behaviors, like maybe hoarding or like spending challenges and all of that stuff. And I feel like I've flown through like the full menu of all of those different types of Taurus shame experiences. And the self-worth piece of like not associating personal worth with income or ability to be productive to a certain degree that meets a certain expectation. All of that has been very much, I think, a Taurian process for me, now that I think about it.
Yeah, and that kind of gets into the, you know, the inner side of Venus would be the Taurian side of Venus, which, you know, fundamentally is about values and value. And when we live in a society where money and possessions are kind of the fundamental value, then not having those things can be a source of shame, which is really fucking intense and sad. And that's where I, you know, tend to, I talk about this a lot, but the outer side of Venus, the Libran side of Venus, is more of that, like, you know, extending to others and connecting with others, and that's important, but also it needs the fundamental ground of the inner side of Venus, like, what am I worth? What are my own values? What do I value? Or, you know, my values and the people around me. And like, what are my resources, not just in terms of money and objects, but like skills and my support system and my community support system and my spirit guides. And so that resourcing word starts to get expanded. Whereas if we go to kind of like shadow Libra Venus stuff, it's that romanticization of you're nobody till somebody loves you. What the fuck? I don't like that. It's terrible. Terrible medicine. not medicine at all. But I started thinking about the Taurus shame thing because I'm in a consult group. It's like other practitioners, and we were talking about shame, and somebody kind of mentioned shame in the Taurian sense can also be very grounding. And I was like, huh, But it can in some ways, because shame can become a way of making sense of the world, right? Like, this happened because I am unworthy or not good enough or whatever. And then like the grounding that comes through like understanding your place in things, even that very like distorted way. And I went, huh.
Yeah.
There was the
and
thunk.
It can lend. Yeah, there's the thunk. Yeah. And I think that can also help you feel powerful, or it can help you feel like you have some degree of agency or control in a situation. If it's a me problem, then like it's a me solution. Like I get to fix it. And that sort of like self continual process of like self critique and all of that, I think for me personally, with my Scorpio Pluto in the sixth house, which can be very like self-degrading, and then opposite my Taurus Sun and Mercury. And so I think that axis for me contains a lot of that fixed shame and has also been the site of a lot of resolution for it. Moving into the sort of like Taurian sense of self-worth, like I'm worthy as I am. Like I am worthy and good, quote, heavy quotes, as I am. And then that kind of like ripples through that axis and helps with a lot of the deeper scorpionic material too.
Yeah.
But it can be stubborn either way.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think of like the what I would consider a Taurian ability to like love yourself, like hold space for yourself, no matter what. That kind of gets into like self-love territory, which I think is experiencing some backlash now, but I'm still gonna say I don't fucking know. I think self-love is hugely important, not as like the end-all be-all, but like how do you hold yourself even when you're feeling shame, even when you've done something wrong, which is definitely that kind of, if we're working with the archetypes and the energies experientially as a way of like, you know, growing, then that becomes Taurian energy as well. So we might have already kind of talked about this, but what do you think are Taurus's superpowers and maybe Achilles' heel? That's your own question I'm throwing at you.
Okay, so I think that a Taurus superpower is really resourcefulness. I think that Taurus people can often see like a plastic bag and come up with a sort of like generative use for that. And in more of like an inner way, I think that often there's a deep well of strength that Taurus people can often tap into, that can be expressed as that sort of like persistent or stubborn ability to keep going. But definitely to like ground amidst chaos often, and to find that center or be that center for other people, or for the self. And there's a sort of a power and a durability that can be really supportive in communities when you need a sort of like practical grounded energy to like help keep things there. I think that in itself can also be an Achilles heel when Taurus neglects itself for the sake of surviving or for the sake of supporting. Like personally, I've experienced for most of my life the challenges with like the Taurian flavor of workaholism and like the stuff we talked about at the top of the conversation about being able to keep going and keep going and keep going. When it comes to like ideas and stubbornness of the mind, there's an inflexibility that I think can cause Taurus to root so much in something that it thinks it wants or thinks it believes because it feels safer to stay there than to open up to trying something different or seeing something different. And I think that can really be true in relationships too, like challenges with compromise, because there's a sort of like fear response that comes up over the idea of like changing your position or opening up to being wrong, which can be hard for a lot of fixed people and definitely Taurus. And that can be destructive. That can lead into a lot of unnecessary loss and destruction if you can't find a way to sort of adapt and find that sense of security and safety within, regardless of what you think or what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's making me think of, like, I think about Taurus and tradition a lot, which I would kind of put tradition in terms of like Capricorn too, and maybe a couple other places, but like Taurus and tradition, or like Taurus and the Hierophant card, which I associate with Taurus and with tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, in so many ways, like tradition is such an important part of culture and family life and personal life. Like it gives us a way to orient to life and its passages. But I also spend a lot of time thinking about like traditions that my culture has that I'm just like, at what cost? Like you're hanging on to this tradition, even though you can see fully how destructive it is, or you can see how it is, you know, exclusive, or all these other things. And like, at what point? I try to like give a lot of like, okay, well, but just let people do their thing. And then I get to a point where I'm like, no, that is not okay. Like there's a narrowing of vision or like blinders that get put on.
Yeah.
Where the tradition becomes like, I have to hold on to this at all costs. And I understand it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, then, you know, there could be the experience of loss if you let it go, or like having to reconcile with, I've been doing this thing that has been harmful. What does that mean about me? Am I a bad person? Right. Like I get it. But also just that like stubbornness of tradition where I'm like, I can't relate to it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's really valuable for Taurus people to like really embrace the concept of like sunk costs, like, because there's this idea of investment that comes up of like, but I've worked so hard, or like I've put so much into this, or they, our ancestors, or the traditions, we've put so much into them. There's so much investment. So how could we possibly let go of that? And that's something that like I see in a lot of other Taurus people, and something that I've really struggled with in terms of jobs, relationships, homes, like, but I've invested so much and now I just have to go. Now we just say bye.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like that, I think, can get really warpy when looking at that like more harmful stuff too, because it's like the attachment to the energy that's been put into it, or the stories or the history or whatever, can really override the ability to see it with more objectivity and understand that like it's not even maybe serving the purpose you hoped for, or even really helping you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and also I think there's that kind of like the black and white thinking that can come in. Like that is a Taurus cliche, and it, you know, it's there for a reason. But like, what are ways of adapting a tradition?
Yeah.
Or like, what are ways of seeing outside the realms of like, if I accept that this is wrong, then it makes me a bad person. Like where there's lots of gray area in there too. And also like, there is a point where you can say, yes, I know this thing is harmful and I'm going to do it anyway, right? There can be like, it's all about making conscious choices and getting right with yourself, which is a hard thing to say because it can get so twisted, right? But like doing things with open eyes, and then like, can you mediate things, or can you make changes and compromise so that it's in alignment with your values?
Big time. Yeah.
I'm thinking about like what I think the Taurus superpowers are. And I think like the first thing that comes to mind, I love what you said, and I will echo all of that. But the first thing that really comes to mind to me is very like selfish and personal. And that is I love Taurian touch orientation. Like there is like, when I think of like very Taurian partners that I've had, they're so touch oriented, and I love that. It's so like soothing and comforting to me, and gives me oxytocin too. But I think also it's just I love the groundedness of Taurian energy and how it feels so solid, and reliable in a lot of ways. And I think that that reliability is, you know, can be a little bit of a double-edged sword, because Taurian types can also be very self-reliant to a fault sometimes, right? There's that kind of like, I can do it myself. I have to do it myself, whatever it is. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, yeah, that stretch into asking for help is rough.
Yeah, huge. I love both of those, and the sort of the hyper independence bit or self-reliance bit with Taurus. I see it in pretty much every Taurus person that I know to various degrees and in various areas of life. And it's funny when you get two Taurus people together, like talking about their issues, which is something I just did with a Taurus friend recently. I think it's like one of the few combos I'm aware of where I'm like, oh, they got it. They got it. like I really like over trust other Taurus people to like handle their stuff. And then I realize like that's often kind of the opposite of what's needed there. Like I know when I am in that mode, I really like secretly desire someone to be like, do you need help? Can I support you? And I'll have that reflex of like, no. Because there's a sort of shame response that comes up with that need. And so you've got me thinking about how like I need to check on my Taurus friends more often. I need to like see how they're doing and not just like trust that they have it, because I know how it works for me. And there's also, I think, like the capacity to beautify can be really lovely and like create a lot of, you know, even with like the touch element that you're talking about, like there's a sort of comfort that I think Taurus energy can offer to folks. Like, let me make you tea. Let me bring you a snack. Here's a blanket. Like I can like hold you. I can like create space to hold you. And that can lead into the sort of like more controlling side of Taurus too, where it's like, now let me hold.
Control you.
Let me control you. Yeah. I know what's better, or I can like, you know, push my will on the situation, whether it's conscious or unconscious.
Yeah, that's making me think of a couple things. And one of them is the moon's exaltation in Taurus. And I, you know that I have a lot of mixed feelings about exaltations and dignity and debility and all of that. But I understand why the moon feels happy in Taurus, because there is that kind of holding and that kind of like, I mean, emotional beings do well when we have access to like grounding and comfort and support that is tactile. Right? Instead of the kind of like more Cancerian, you know, or in addition to, right? But it was also making me think about something that I might not be able to grab right now. Oh, I mean, Taurus and possessiveness, you know, and I work with a lot of folks who are polyamorous and engaging in, you know, different kinds of non-monogamy. And I myself engage in relationships that way. I've had many people come into me just being like, can I ever be polyamorous if I have Venus and Taurus? And I'm like, yes, but let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. Because there are needs with that kind of signature that oftentimes are this feeling of like, I own my partner, or I want to possess them or whatever, you know? And so it's just like, how does that exist within you? And then how do you work with that? And then like, what are your priorities?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I've seen people with plenty of Taurus make polyamory work. And I've seen people with Taurus who are like, just one.
Yeah.
Right? Because it just kind of the instinctive need for oneness kicks in. There's nothing wrong with that. Unless it's, you know, harming people.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's an ongoing internal discussion for me as someone who's exploring and thinking and wondering about different love opportunities and what structures could look like. And I frequently come up against that, like the more like Piscean floatiness of being able to be a bit less attached and just kind of open to possibility. And then the Taurian, like, no, like if you're, it's kind of like a, if you're here, you're here thing. Like, I think that when I've explored or talked about that with partners, the thing that has not led me to be possessive is like, if I feel presence, if I feel like when we're together, we're together. And so I'm just a kind of a little tangent, but I can think of how Taurus energy like requires that presence and sensuality, and for like these sensual needs to be met in order to feel cared for and in order to feel safe so that you can open up to being less possessive. Because that like grasping can really come through as a reaction to fear, to loss, to jealousy, and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and that's really present, I think, just with the Taurus Scorpio axis in general, because Scorpio has that too, that possessiveness or that like need to control. And, you know, speaking very broadly, you know, like for my Scorpio moon, when I love a person, it is infinite and deep. And it goes in like one direction to them.
Yeah.
You know, and so then it's learning how to like blend that with my Pisces Venus and my Aquarius Sun, which have different needs. You know, they want like more connection with like lots of different things, lots of different people. And my Scorpio moon is like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we kind of switch gears into divination, anything else you want to say about Taurus or offer us from your Taurus wisdom places?
I mean, I feel compelled. Maybe this is my Taurus defense of Taurus coming through, but I feel compelled to like talk about the stereotype of Taurus as being boring.
Ooh. I am not familiar with that one. I'm happy to hear about it.
Really? Though. You've never heard this? Wow.
I don't think so. Okay.
It's very memed about. And I think there are a lot of signs in particular, like fiery, a lot like air and fire energy that can have a hard time with Taurus energy, which can feel more steady and still at times. And I think like it's interesting because again, looking outside at like this window, like you could go outside and you could say like, this might be boring. Like, it's like still, it's steady, it's green. And like, when you look at a still of like a landscape or something, there can be a sort of like boring energy to it, depending on how you experience that. And so like watching a tree grow, boring. But I think that there's a sort of like undercurrent of energy that exists within Taurus that around other types of energy can be felt as opposed to like intellectualized, that can be stimulating like to your felt experience. And so it's just always something that I was like, huh, that I can see it. And I've experienced Taurus people where I was like, you're not particularly interesting to me. Or like, it's like what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And then I've also felt like that, oh, I can like feel the like undercurrents of the energy here that feel active, like roots that are growing into the soil or like a leaf that's really slowly opening. Yeah. But I'm sure some of your listeners at least have experienced boring Taurus energy.
Sure. I mean, that's really interesting to me. I get it from the kind of like, it all depends on everything, it's all relative sense, and like meme writers who are very like airy fiery.
Yeah.
Potentially it could be like, what is that? But like, OMG, there's no boring. I mean, I don't think there's boringness in any of the signs, but like, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking of being on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington and being in the rainforest and just like sitting amongst these trees that are like 800 to 1,000 years old, who have just been like slow, steady growth. Mm-hmm. And it's so still and silent, and like the presence of these beings is just like so significant. Like, yeah, there's nothing boring about that kind of steady, slow growth, like from my being.
Yeah.
You know? So that's interesting. I appreciate you mentioning that. And I'm wondering how you feel about the Taurus memes that I see, which predominantly feature snacks and naps.
I'm all about the Taurus snack nap life. And I think it's accurate. I think you and I talked about Cancer versus Taurus as like the true nappers once. And I don't know, it's a tight race, but yeah, I think
snacks. Cancer likes to be in bed.
In bed. Like Cancer like can reading. Like live from bed at times. Yes. Like I know Cancers who work from bed, which like I can't do. Like I like to have the distinction. I'm a huge snacker, and whenever I hang out with Taurus friends, we're snacking. We're snacking. It's cozy. I love the coziness, and my snacking and my napping has really kicked into overdrive this Taurus season. So yeah.
Yeah.
Resonant.
Okay. Well, then I will continue maybe sending you or start sending you Taurus snack nap memes, because right. I always think they're funny.
So
okay. So one of the things I had wanted to do was just some divination in a couple different directions. Did you bring books or tarot cards? I can't remember. You brought both.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have decks. I have plenty of books.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with just this quote that I have already chosen. So Jana and I, along with another astrologer, Amanda Painter, have started a Substack called The Astrophile, and we haven't officially launched it, but we keep talking about it everywhere anyway. So there you go. But I posted a piece called Body of Wonder that's about the Jupiter, Uranus, and Taurus conjunction, and I did a little bit of bibliomancy for it. And as we were prepping for today's call, I just kept thinking about this quote, so I'm just going to bring it into this space. It is a little bit long, but I'm going to read it, and then we'll either have commentary on it or not. And then Jana, you can do a little bit of bibliomancy as well, just for Taurus okay. insight. Okay. So this is from David Abrams' Becoming Animal. And it says, "It is not primarily a set of mechanisms waiting to be figured out, this breathing land. It is not a stock of resources waiting to be utilized by us, or a storehouse of raw materials waiting to be developed. It is, rather, the very body of wonder, a shuddering field of intelligence in whose round life we participate. And if today this dreaming land has been forgotten behind a clutch of glowing screens that intercept the fascination of our focused eyes, if it has been eclipsed by styles of speaking that deaden our senses, and by mechanic modes of activity that stifle the erosion between our body and the leafing forests, then it is time to listen, underneath all these words, for the animal stirrings that move within our limbs and our swelling torso. It is time to unplug our gaze from the humming screen, walk out of the house to blink and piss under a river of stars. There are new stories waiting in the cool grasses, new songs. Mm-hmm. That's good, Taurus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that association with rawness too, because I think there is a sort of like rewilding that we can find in Taurus energy. Like you mentioning, remembering that we're a part of nature, that's Taurus medicine, and sticking your toes in the dirt, like plunging your hands into water, like experiencing that sort of visceral felt sensation of being alive.
Absolutely. I love that you use that word rawness and wildness too, because they're not necessarily words that I would associate with Taurus, because mm-hmm. I think of them as being like, I don't know, different, but like it is very mm-hmm. Taurian rawness. And I actually this morning, this won't be too much of a tangent, but this morning I was sitting, and it's Friday, so I'm, you know, thinking about Venus's day and like my connection with Venus. And I oftentimes get maybe more worked up than I like to admit about people thinking that Venus in Libra is like the epitome of Venus. And part of that is because, you know, I cannot shake off the like patriarchal associations that Venus is best, like most well-resourced when she is able to be diplomatic and connecting. And I don't think that those things are bad, but like my relationship with Venus is built on those things, but more like rawness. Like sometimes mm-hmm. I just posted about this on Threads. Sometimes on Venus days, I am like sobbing or raging. And sometimes when Venus comes to me, she is wrathful or vengeful. Yeah. And I don't think that that's like a debilitated form.
No.
Like that is that rawness. And I'm talking about more emotional rawness here. But also there's that kind of like wallowing in the mud. Mm-hmm. You know, and just like putting it in your hair because you have this kind of like urge to be embedded. Mm-hmm. That's rawness too. That's wildness too. And that seems so important.
Totally. That's very similar to my experience of Venus, is like, I want to like smell the scents. I want to like have it on my fingers. Like, I feel like Pooh Bear with honey. Like, I want to like experience that. Like, I want to touch it, I want to taste it, I want to feel it. And it's so funny because like I think I do have a bit of a block when it comes to Venusian Libra and the expression, just because I don't have any Libra placements, and I have so much Taurus that it's like, this is it. But like deeply associate with the sensuality, and cognitively understand the like Libra expression of that. But the wildness of Venus, I think, is where Venusian power comes from too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, your bibliomancy turn.
Okay. So this is just kind of a strange pick for me, but it's What's By Me. It's Brave New World. Okay. Yes, I can, Bernard answered in a very loud voice, somewhat taken aback, but still majestically. Then show it, said the director. Certainly, but it's in the passage. One moment. Bernard hurried to the door and threw it open. Come in, he commanded, and the reason came in and showed itself. There was a gasp, a murmur of astonishment and horror. A young girl screamed, standing on a chair to get a better view of someone upset, two test tubes full of spermatozoa, bloated, sagging, and among those firm, youthful bodies, those undistorted faces, a strange and terrifying monster of middle-agedness, Linda advanced into the room, coquettishly smiling her broken and discolored smile, and rolled as she walked with what was meant to be a voluptuous undulation, her enormous haunches. Bernard walked beside her.
Whoa, dude.
Interesting. Yeah, we got some interesting material in here.
I mean, for that, I'm just like, the writing itself is so like sensual, right? There's like voluptuousness and like undulations and
yep. And I like that it started with like, then show it, like,
yeah,
this matter of fact, like, demonstrate. Sperm. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So we just took a little break to pull up Aldous Huxley's chart, because that's the author of A Brave New World. And although the Rotten rating is C, the moon is firmly in Taurus, no matter what the time would be. So we had a little Taurus moon visitation there.
There it is.
Beautiful.
It's arrived.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're also going to do a little bit of tarot, just a 3-card divination. We're recording this about 2 days after the new moon. So we're just going to do a little, what do we need to know? What can help us for this Taurus lunar cycle? Do you want to pull cards, or do you want me to?
I have a deck. I'm happy to pull cards. We could both pull cards too.
Let's both pull cards and see what happens.
Okay.
Okay. Co-shuffling.
I'm gonna spread them out.
Let's hear the sounds of shuffling instead of hitting pause again.
Interesting.
Okay. Do you want to just go card by card? Or what are your initial impressions of what you see? Let's say that.
Interesting. Yeah, not what I was expecting, but it's synthesizing in the noodle. When you say card by card, do you want to do each of us does a card at a time?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my first card, Queen of Earth. Which tracks. I mean, every time I see this card, I'm just like, yes, keep frickin' planting your garden, keep nurturing it. We're coming into a new phase of kind of like owning that groundedness, like the potentials of the Queen of Earth as the, you know, the word that comes to my mind is dominatrix of the earth element. Feels really soothing to me at this time, that, you know, there's so much going on in the world, which also comes up in the cards that I pulled. There's so much going on in the world that is so off-centering and is so, it's very difficult to ground, I think, for many of us, whether it's larger world things or personal world things. And so this energy comes in just as like a fortification, or that kind of like stabilizing factor that we've been talking about so much. And I'm also like paying attention to the bunnies that are playing in the side of this. And bunnies to me are a symbol of Venus. And one of the things I've been thinking, I'm feeling it out right now. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about is, you know, pleasure activism, and also just a need for pleasure during times of change.
Yeah.
But not in ways that are like, you know, supporting escapism, at least not for me. And so there is this kind of like fruitfulness and fertility and pleasure orientation that comes through.
Yeah. I often think about how during tower moments in life too, it's often Venusian experiences that can help us get through and orienting to pleasure. Like when you're brought to your knees, you can smell the earth and touch the flowers.
Pleasure and connection. Right, whether it is with people or other beings. One of the things that's been up for me through Neptune conjunct my Venus, which is also your Venus, is like a total absence of human connection. I mean, not total, but like a reanimation of the solidarity and connection I feel with the plants and the flowers and the animals, and how grounding that's been.
Yeah. My first card is the Prince of Pentacles, or the Knight of Pentacles, which is actually a Taurus card traditionally.
What deck is that?
This is the Cosmic Slumber Tarot.
Okay.
Which felt appropriate. So in this deck, in this card, we have this figure who's wearing these like loose clothes, and they're out in what looks like a forest or a garden. They're holding a pentacle up in their hand and like looking up at it. And they are almost seated on top of a sleeping bull that's just cozy, snoozing in the grass and in the flowers. And so it brings me again into that like thud, like this person is looking up at this pentacle and they feel grounded to the point that they're sitting on top of this beast, but there's not fear. There's a sort of like sturdiness, and it feels like trust, a trust that they'll be supported as they sort of reach toward this pentacle, which might mean like some type of progress that you're trying to make, or some type of work that you're trying to do, or something you're trying to build. And so it's feeling like this almost a support to that queen who's doing their own work, and this knight or this prince is sort of here like experiencing the trust and experiencing the patience, and knowing that like this bull could stand up at any moment and like take them in a different direction if it wanted to. But for now, there's rest, there's sleep.
Can I see it again?
Mm-hmm.
Just as I'm okay, yeah, as I'm like just feeling like I'm imagining myself as that figure on that bull, kind of like straddling the bull like that, I'm feeling this sense of like a little bit of whimsy, like there's a lightness, or like a ooh, this could be fun, right? So you're saying there's that sense of like trust and almost safety, and I get that too. It's like I have this thing between my legs, and it is like sturdy. And then like, ooh, here's this thing that I get to keep building. And it's making me think of like, what is it that we are feeling, not just like pulled or called to creating, but like feeling a little bit of excitement about, like what's catching your eye in terms of like, ooh, yeah, I could do that thing. That sounds
totally
good.
Yeah, they're really bright colors, and the way that they're gazing at this pentacle is like, let me look at how the light catches it. Like there's a sort of whimsical playfulness to it too. Yeah.
So then the second card that I drew is the Two of Fire, and I'm working with the Four Enchanted Four Hoxa Tarot. And I love it because just, you know, at a very visceral level, it's this, it is a manifestation card. And what's shown in this image is we're looking at like a fairy with their backs to us. So they have their wings spread and their arms are up in the air. And there's these little glimmers of fire kind of going out from the hands. And then there's some crows sitting behind them, which there often are in this artist's decks. And on one side of the card, there is a cityscape that looks very dark and almost smoky to me. And on the other side of the card, there's just forest. Um, And there's a kind of your the way that it's drawn, you can see kind of the intersections between the two. And so it's speaking to me of this, like, okay, on the one hand we have, this is a very Amanda take, on the one hand we have these kind of like cities in smoke, there's this kind of like sense of this can't hold, and on the other hand there is just like, you know, untamed forest, but there's this little section in the car that's kind of like overlap. So like, what is the vision that's in between these two spaces? Like, there's no going back to just fully undeveloped land, undeveloped life. And also, we're going to choke on the smoke if we stay over here. So like, what is the vision that takes us into the intersection of these two things?
I love that imagery.
It's a good deck.
My second card is the Ten of Swords. And in this deck, we have a figure that's kind of in the more traditional, on the ground, laying down, face up, 10 swords in their body. And then there's a sort of clone-like figure of them, a spirit it looks like, that's flying away. And they're sort of up in these like fluffy clouds, and the card is like bright pink, and they're wearing this red robe. And the person or the spirit that's flying away has a really peaceful expression. And so while this is a card that can instill a lot of fear for people, it's not an easy one, and it represents endings and often painful ones. There is the sense that in the leaving behind of something that is no longer working, or that has caused us incredible stress and pain and maybe even trauma, that there is that sort of like release moment that can provide incredible freedom. And it's bringing me back to what we've talked about with Taurus's desire to hang on to times what does need to end or what does need to go, and how that release can be a moment of peace and acceptance.
I love that depiction of that card. It's so, I mean, the card itself, and, you know, the Rider-Waite deck or more traditional depictions is, you know, really intense. It's also very melodramatic, like it's 10 swords into the body. But the way that I often, the way that I've been taught to think about the tens in tarot from Megan Angus, who's a dear friend and practitioner, is that the tens are kind of the comma in the sentence, and they're where like the you know, the first phase of learning is ending. And then you are, you know, either transitioning into the court cards of that suit or an entirely new journey. But one of the ways that I think about it is that when those, you know, the end of a cycle comes, then oftentimes our demons or our patterns will like really amp themselves up. And in the swords, it's, you know, the mental patterns of cruelty that we have that get super loud when they're about to go or transition. And so I love that this card is showing kind of like the end of a pattern of self-cruelty, essentially, and then the freedom of flight, right? Like moving away from it. And so I would imagine that for folks who are listening, really paying attention to those self-cruel patterns or self-deceptive patterns, or just pain that you have around things that are going on in your life, and, you know, try and let them, you know, let them work themselves out without feeding the script even more, as much as you can. All right, my final card is the Fool. Let's see, what am I seeing in this card right now? It's this one always shows up, I always read it very differently. And it's essentially, it's a fairy that's kind of sitting with her chin on her hand, like gazing up at this bird that seems to be squawking. And she's sitting on a beehive. And the first thing that I thought when I saw the card was Uranus. It's a more modern correspondence, but it's a card that's associated with Uranus, which tracks for me because it's about new beginnings, which can be exhilarating and terrifying. But also, you know, we just had a conjunction between Uranus and Jupiter in Taurus. And as I'm just kind of feeling into it, There is that bird that's just like trying to get your attention. There is a voice or a theme or a something that's trying to get your attention. And you've started engaging with it a little. You're paying attention to it. But it has something louder to tell you. And I think that that's really resonant in terms of, you know, things about society have been getting louder for a very long time now, and they're screaming at us now. And I think that for many folks, fully stepping into the reality, the realization of like what is going on, demands that kind of Uranian energy of like knowing that everything will change. Everything is changing. And it's making me think of that tradition conversation. And why we hold on to the things that we hold on to. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that card.
I was just so attracted to the bees at the bottom of it, sitting on this beehive. It kind of like the way that they're positioned almost looks like the fairy is sort of like the queen bee, although she's not, I don't think. But I think about the sort of like, it's interesting because the fool is often alone, like they're on this journey that they're just beginning, but the hive is sort of the opposite of that. So it brings in this like collective element of how we need to work together to create those beginnings. And the change that you're describing is not something we can do individually. Like it does require that we each kind of know the role and the work that we can bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And the hive is also like to me, there's a sense of like, if I think of it at an interior level, like lots of things going on within, like the busy bees are like doing all their things. And then there might be like one thing that's squawking a little bit louder that needs some attention.
Yeah. My last card is the Six of Cups. And this, I really like this card. I've never really looked so deeply at it before. But there are six cups, yellow cups, that are placed around this person, and they're holding the sixth cup. And from that cup, there are what look like three fish, maybe like koi or something, that are like in this puddle that's like in the air. Like the fish are up in the air suspended, and it has, again, this very whimsical, dreamlike quality to it. And this person is staring straight ahead, and they feel young to me. This feels like a child, and that's sort of the Six of Cups can be a card of remembrance and nostalgia and kind of like a return to safety and care. And it feels like there's this, just this element of like bringing in wonder as a like a sort of salve during times like this, like bringing in that capacity to vision, to see, to hope, to experience whimsy and pleasure, like we've talked about, and how returning to that like little one within us who access the dream world in their own ways can be not at times dissociative, but also like very supportive and very medicinal. And that's something that part of ourselves needs in order to keep going. Like we have to stop, we have to dream, we have to check in with ourselves and access our imagination. So offering that maybe as a gift to yourselves this season, that ability to dream and that spaciousness.
I love it. I really, really love that card is kind of the parting note for us. Feels very, very real and hopeful. That's great.
Me too.
All right, Jana. Well, this has been fantastic, which is not surprising. Thank you so much for being here. Can you let folks know where they can find you, any offerings that you have that you want to talk about, things like that?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me. This was really lovely. And You can find me at Feeling Loudly on social, or feelingloudly.com is my website. I don't have like really any particular offers going on right now, but I do offer astrology, tarot, Akashic Records readings, and I have a Patreon and a Discord, and you can find all of that stuff on my website and on my social.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Tori and Jana, for being here for this episode. And we'll see you around.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so that ends my Taurian episode. I hope that you got a lot out of that. As always, if you have questions, please feel free to reach out through my website, aquarianspirals.com. You are welcome to, you know, join my Patreon to get access to a bunch of amazing things. I definitely do session work if you're ready for a deep dive into your soul. And other than that, you know, just wishing you the best, and just closing out by dedicating the benefit of this episode, the work that we do together, to the complete liberation and supreme enlightenment of all beings immediately and without delay. See you next time.